All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Thursday, everybody. Today is June 11th, 2026, and our top story this morning, it was hard to pick a top story this morning. We've got many competing for the title, but let's start with inflation. The Producer Price Index measures inflation further upstream. We got CPI yesterday, came out in line with expectations. We got PPI today, and it was no bueno. Came in slightly higher than expected on a yearly basis, much higher than expected on a monthly basis. And oddly enough, we had a lot of downward revisions to April's PPI included today, despite the higher than expected readings. Not used to seeing big revisions to PPI, but we got that one. So let's start with the headline number, 6.5% year-over-year producer price inflation. That's versus 6.4 expected. So it was higher than expected and up from the 5.7% last month. That 5.7% was downwardly revised from 6.0, but still at 6.5 now, PPI trending in the wrong direction. Now, it's also important to note, we got CPI yesterday. It came in at 4.2, almost 4.3. So producer prices are rising faster than consumer prices. That means profit margins are getting compressed. And also producer prices tend to front run consumer prices because, well, producers see their costs go up. Eventually, they pass those cost increases on to their customers, or they lay off workforces and curtail production. One of those two things is probably going to happen here. Either way, not good for American businesses, what we're seeing here. But the real shocking number was the month-over-month PPI. 1.1% inflation in a month. Not per year, in a month. That's versus 0.7 that was expected and unchanged from last month at 1.1. Now, last month's number was downwardly revised also from an astronomically high 1.4. All right, so it's the month-over-month number was bad. It wasn't as bad as last month was initially reported, but it's as bad as last month's number was downwardly revised to. You guys keeping up with all this? I know this data is a mess, but suffice it to say, producer prices are rising too fast. That means more inflation on the horizon. Market doesn't like it because the next move from the Federal Reserve is probably going to be a hike now, almost certainly going to be a hike. The European Central Bank just raised rates today, as a matter of fact, 25 basis points. That's the ECB's first rate hike since 2023. And look around at financial asset prices. The world is not positioned for higher interest rates here. The world is positioned for like a return to 2021, a trillion for everybody. And well, that's just going to be a wonderful combination once that realization sets in for equities. Now, also going on this morning, Oracle earnings were reported after the bell yesterday. And Oracle stock posted a top and bottom line beat. Oh, yay, we always beat our earnings at Oracle. But the stock is down more than 10% this morning. WTF is going on at Oracle. Well, strong revenue growth of 21%. That's great. 24% growth in adjusted earnings per share. Put a little asterisk next to that adjusted. Oh, earnings per share aren't high enough. We'll just adjust those away. No problem. The problem, though. There is a problem. They forgot to make money, and that is the point of business, right? I'm new to this, but some of you more seasoned veterans, maybe some of you guys in the All In podcast, you want to help me out here? Isn't the point to make money? Again, it's amateur hour, but I thought that point is to make money. Yeah, free cash flow at Oracle, negative $23.7 billion. You can adjust the hell out of those earnings per share. You can round trip, circle jerk your way to revenue, but you can't fake money in the bank. They don't have any. Negative $23.7 billion. Oh, but wait, there's more. A $40 billion equity raise. And I shit you not, it was like an hour before Oracle reported earnings. I posted, kind of joking, kind of not, hey, is Oracle going to announce an equity raise today or not? And well, yeah, they did an hour later, $40 billion more stock that they're offering. And I'm sure the market's just going to just gobble up all that negative liquidity on top of the $75 billion for the SpaceX IPO and the $80 billion for Google. And what was it, $7 billion for Supermicro yesterday? Amazon's probably right behind them. Meta is said to be offering tens of billions. Oh, yeah, then you got the OpenAI and the Anthropic IPOs coming after that. And I'm sure there's just all of this magic money sitting on a tree just waiting to buy up all of this stuff, all in the name of inflating the AI bubble. Oh, by the way, OpenAI is lowering their prices. According to the Wall Street Journal, drastic price cuts are coming at OpenAI. That must be because the demand is insane, right? You lower prices when demand goes up. Is that how, again, new guy here, some of you seasoned veterans, all right? Some of you Silicon Valley podcast bros, help me out here. When demand is insane, do prices usually go down? Oh, what's this? Oh, no. Prices usually go up when demand is insane, and therefore prices dropping would suggest demand is less insane than it was before. Yeah, tokenomics, guys. The phenomenon of token maxing and the blowout in AI bills ever since they switched over to token-based pricing. And then companies start pushing back. They announce they're cutting their AI budgets. Oh, crap, we didn't get our IPO done in time. Quick, lower prices. Not good at OpenAI. But I have a more sinister theory here. Do we need to do this? Let's get this guy out here. A little bit of merchandising here. Spaceballs the flamethrower. Yeah, I have a theory on why OpenAI is lowering prices. Because they already have guarantees that government money is coming to bail them out. And that's why they're going to lower their prices. You think I'm kidding? President Trump yesterday, and I quote, says AI companies will agree to giving back to the public. Yeah, that's right. Sam Altman, the effective altruist, he's going to give back to the public, right? No. What's going to happen is the federal government is going to go searching through the archives, find some obscure act of 19 whatever, and they're going to find billions of dollars of your money, taxpayer dollars, that they're going to use to pump into these AI companies. They're going to buy equity stakes in it so those companies can stay solvent because they are all on the brink of failure now that investment capital is starting to dry up. In other words, they're going to bail out the AI bubble. That's why OpenAI, I think, is lowering their prices because they already have the implicit guarantee from the government. It just hasn't been announced yet. All right. Also going on this morning, what else we have? Citadel. Oh, look at this. Citadel Securities is out with a research note on tokenomics, saying that they have argued for some time about AI's economics not being quite as good, that artificial intelligence is subject to the law of supply and demand like everything else. As a matter of fact, Citadel says they warned as far back as February of this year that AI's economics weren't all they were cracked up to be and that they weren't living up to the hype. As early as February of this year. Hey, Citadel, largest freaking like hedge fund market maker in the world. Way to get out in front of that one. You guys, wow, it's very prophetic. February of this year. Wow, yeah. You know, you're only like, what, 3.5 years behind the one-man YouTube operation from some guy who like barely ever leaves his house in Southeast Pennsylvania. But hey, you know, you and your multi-trillion dollars in assets under management, way to get out in front of that one, Citadel. Okay. Yeah. Citadel is telling us that the AI economics aren't working. We've got Amazon is borrowing another $17.5 billion this morning. I know you think this is an old headline. You're like, Jack, no, we heard that story already. No, you didn't. That was the other story about Amazon borrowing $10 billion in the US or in the Canadian bond market from 2 days ago. Okay. So different stories. 2 days ago, they borrowed $10 billion US. In the Canadian bond market. Today, they borrow $17.5 billion U.S. All because sacrificing at the altar of artificial intelligence. And I'm telling you, mark my words, Amazon will be announcing an equity raise at some point too. They'll be diluting their shareholders, probably to the tune of something like $50 to $80 billion, just like the other hyperscalers are doing. And where are they? Where are those Stacey Raskin research analysts, you know, all you guys on CNBC, where's everybody telling me that big tech earnings, robust tech earnings are supporting the AI build-out? Where are those guys? How come they're all using special purpose vehicles, off-balance sheet debt, bond offerings, equity offerings, diluting their shareholders? If their earnings are so robust, why is their free cash flow in the negative tens of billions? And why are they borrowing money and trying to hide it all while diluting their shareholders? Maybe the AI build-out is, you ready for this? Okay, we're putting this back on. All right, we're really pumping that merchandising today. Maybe the AI build-out is not supported by robust tech earnings. I know, it's crazy, right? I'm just a Twitter rando with a conspiracy theory. What do I know? I'm just the guy who's been effing right about this thing the whole time. And the world is slowly starting to realize it. Oh, but wait, it's too late now. Everybody's money has already been burned on this bubble. Hey, better luck next time, everyone. Oh, gotta love these guys. Okay, what else we got? Subprime auto dealer America's Car Mart is on the brink of bankruptcy because the consumer is doing so awesome. That stock was down 55% yesterday. They announced that they were hiring Houlihan Lokey to come in and clean up their books. And anybody familiar with that name, Houlihan Lokey is like the Grim Reaper of companies. You hire them when you're picking out a coffin for your company. That's what Houlihan Lokey does. Also, last one of the day, Alibaba, JD.com, ByteDance, all kinds of Chinese e-commerce companies selling off big yesterday as the Chinese government is scolding them about price cuts. I guess China's having their Amazon Prime Day equivalent. And the Chinese government is really worried about consumer deflation, about the race to the bottom in prices in China, the opposite of the inflation problem we have here in the States. Man, how do we get their problems? When you're hopelessly indebted and you've got a multi-trillion dollar housing bubble and everybody is borrowed up to their eyeballs to buy apartments and second apartments and third apartments that nobody lives in, you can't afford deflation because that debt gets hopelessly more expensive to pay off, ultimately leading to default, which the alternative, the Western model, is to just inflate away your currency and default that way, which is better. Honestly, I couldn't tell you. They both kind of suck. Maybe it's like, don't waste money to begin with. Don't go into debt to hopelessly, endlessly burn capital on no value add projects. See also AI bubble, but I digress. Yeah, China's really struggling with a deflation problem. They're worried about overcapacity. They overbuilt their industrial capacity. They overbuilt all their cities. They've got a mountain of debt because of it. And now prices are going lower, which means that debt is getting less and less sustainable. So their solution is to scold their tech companies about lowering prices. And in Chinese culture, that's actually a very big deal when the government scolds you, because if the government scolds you and you keep doing it, you tend to disappear in the middle of the night and then reappear 2 years later like Jack Ma saying wonderful things about God Emperor Xi. Guys, we got a lot to talk about today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every business day. Right now, the S&P 500 is in positive territory. You can see here, this was the PPI release. Not looking so good. Also, right before PPI was released, we also had some announcements from President Trump or some statements from President Trump. Look, the missiles are flying again. We've got peace rockets crisscrossing each other in the skies over the Strait of Hormuz once again this morning. More bombings overnight. And President Trump is now saying that very soon the United States will be taking Karg Island. He said that in the press. And you know, luckily, we have the element of surprise on our side now. That's going on. So that came out right around the same time as PPI. So the market may be reacting to both of those stories and caught a little bit of a bounce, but currently higher by 36 points or 0.5% to the upside. The Dow is still higher by 273 points. Or 0.55% higher, but off its highs of the morning. Again, right around President Trump's statements and that PPI report, the market started to dip a little bit. And the NASDAQ is up 0.84%, having a good morning here, 239 points higher after losing another 500 points yesterday. Again, the PPI took a little bit of a chunk out of that, but higher by 0.83% this morning. The DXY is stronger by 10 basis points, 100.14 on the dollar. PPI drove that one higher. Prospects for higher interest rates means a stronger dollar. Also, something worth keeping an eye on here, guys. USD JPY, this has been kind of lingering in the background here. We haven't talked a lot about Japan. Kazuo Ueda is actually like in the hospital right now. He's expected to miss the next BOJ meeting. But the yen is weakening again. It's back to 160.5 to the dollar. And when you look at USD JPY, this chart going up is the yen weakening versus the dollar here. The reason this is important is 160 is historically the level that the Japanese will defend their currency at. They'll dump U.S. government treasuries to raise dollars in order to sell those dollars in the Forex market and to buy their own currency, driving down the dollar and up the yen. That's what they did back in, I think it was late in May. That's this big red candle here and this other red candle here. That was the Japanese finance ministry and the BOJ dumping dollars in order to buy yen. And well, the yen just resumed its decline after they did that. And now we're right back at that same level before that happened, which means we're probably days, maybe even hours away from another yen intervention, where Japanese finance authorities intervene in Forex markets, which usually means higher interest rates here in the States when that happens. Speaking of interest rates, looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are actually a little bit lower on the long end today, despite that higher than expected inflation print. The 30-year yield, 5.006, that's lower by almost 2 basis points. The 10-year yield, 4.529, is off by a point and change. The 2-year yield is higher, up a point and change at 4.139. And the 1 month is at 3.659, lower by almost 1 point. Also, speaking of interest rate, the European Central Bank hikes interest rates for the first time since 2023 as Iran war ramps up energy costs. There's Christine Thefelin, the head of the European Central Bank there. The European Central Bank announced a quarter point rate hike on Thursday, bringing its key interest rate to 2.25% as the Iran war continues to blow inflation off target. Markets had been pricing in a near 100% chance of the ECB raising rates by at least 25 points ahead of its June Governing Council meeting, according to LSEG data. So no surprises here. The ECB was largely expected to do this, but it is the first rate hike since 2023 when they started cutting. Inflation going in the wrong direction. Meanwhile, Bitcoin is having a good morning, $62,698, higher by 1,250 points this morning. Bitcoin has been consolidating in the low 60s since the bloodbath that we got earlier this week, or earlier last week, I should say, and over the weekend, currently sitting just under 63,000. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is higher by $5 or 0.14% to the upside this morning, $4,077 for spot gold. It has been a rough week for the gold patch. Meanwhile, spot silver is also up this morning, 11 cents or 0.18% in the green, $63.51 for spot silver. I like the shiny, even though it's been a hard week to like the shiny, I still like it long term. Looking over at copper, we're lower by 0.45%. Platinum is down by 1%. Palladium off by 0.45%. And crude oil is higher by a paltry 0.5%, 45 cents to the upside. $90.46 for July WTI futures, even though President Trump just said, we're going to be hitting them very hard. We're going to bomb the hell out of them. We're going to reduce them to rubble. We're going to take Karg Island very soon, but we're also going to have a deal. I'm told that's also a thing. Oil's only up 50 cents. So what's going on here? Well, I want to send a shout out to the pasta man who sent me this one yesterday. I was unaware of this. You know, we've all been hearing about the dumping of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but it's the way they're dumping it that may be informing why oil prices are stubbornly low here. U.S. offers to loan up to 40 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It's the word loan there. That's the operative statement here. The U.S. is seeking to loan energy companies up to 40 million barrels of crude oil from the SPR to help push fuel prices down, the Department of Energy said on Wednesday. The latest U.S. offer to loan the oil is part of the previously announced U.S. agreement to release 172 million barrels. So this isn't 40 million more. This is part of the original 172 million barrels that they announced months ago. So far, the U.S. has loaned out about 133 million barrels of the oil in that agreement. All right, so we're starting to run out. They'd have to renew the authorization to release the SPR here. But it's the way they're doing this. This is important here. Companies borrowing the oil are required to return the original volumes with premiums of up to 24% in the form of extra oil. The department says that the system will help stabilize markets at no cost to U.S. taxpayers. Energy Secretary Chris Wright has said that about 35 to 40 million barrels of extra oil will be returned this year and next in the form of premiums. All right, so this is kind of interesting why oil prices won't go up. The U.S. is not selling the oil from the SPR. They are loaning it. In other words, they're giving it to the oil companies, and the oil companies are selling it. So they're paying nothing for it, and then they're just dumping it on the open market, driving prices lower. Now, here's the rub. Those oil companies have to pay that oil back with interest, but the interest isn't in dollars. They have to pay back extra oil, premiums of 24%. So for every 4 barrels of oil that they borrow, they have to return 5. Well, that's kind of interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a way for the government to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve without getting authorization from Congress to actually buy the oil, because Congress doesn't do a damn thing. They just sit on their stupid thumbs and make their stupid political speeches. So this is a way to refill the SPR, assuming they adhere to the letter of the law. But are they actually going to do that? Because what if oil prices don't come down? What if oil skyrockets to $200 a barrel? Well, then the oil companies would be losing a ton of money on this deal, because they'd have to not only buy back the more expensive oil, but they'd have to buy back even more expensive oil. So they'd be losing big here. And if that were to happen, what's to stop the government from just saying, instead of taking the oil, we're going to take stakes in the oil companies, and Americans are going to be very rich. We're all going to be very rich. We're going to get dividends from the oil companies. So it's possible they're going to try to weasel their way out of this, maybe use equity to get out of this. And I'm also curious, how are they accounting for this on their books? And I haven't studied the balance sheets or the financial statements from the oil majors, but that's a huge liability that the oil companies are carrying. And they owe those barrels. And when you account for that, you have to use today's price. So there's got to be a big negative hole sitting on the books of the oil majors here. And when the strait finally does open up, the fact that they're going to have to buy back those barrels and then some is also going to prevent the price from falling right away. It's going to maintain that upward pressure on the price of oil even after the strait reopens. So that's kind of interesting. I didn't realize that's the methodology they were using for dumping the SPR. Thank you, Pasta Man, for that data. All right, on to producer price inflation. And here is the chart. And it's not great, Bob. 6.5% May PPI, producer price inflation, up from a downwardly revised 5.7% year over year in April. That April number was originally reported at 6.0, but still 6.5 versus the previous 6.0. Not a good look here. Producer price is going in the wrong direction, and they remain higher. The PPI remains higher than CPI, which means profit margins are being compressed as the producer prices rise faster than the prices for the consumers. Looking on a month-over-month basis, again, not good here. 1.1% month-over-month. That is higher than the 0.7 that was expected and unchanged from a downwardly revised 1.1 in April. That was initially reported as 1.4. So if you take the initial report from last month, we're heading lower, but the fact that they downwardly revised it means we're staying the same. It's unusual to see downward revisions in PPI. We're used to that in the jobs numbers, but not in PPI. All right, looking at core PPI year over year, this strips out food and energy. Again, not a great look. 4.9% year over year, still well above the Fed's 2% inflation target. Although the market was expecting 5.4% for core PPI, so that's not too terrible there. It could have been a lot worse. And it's unchanged, although last month's number was also downwardly revised, initially reported at 5.2. And on a month-over-month basis, this number looks a little bit better, 0.4% month-over-month versus 0.5 expected. So a little bit lighter for core PPI month-over-month. Also down from the 0.7, which itself was downwardly revised from 1.0 last month. So, if you throw out all the other data points and you just look at core PPI month over month, it looks good. I'm just trying to be positive here, guys. I dabble in optimism from time to time. All right, the other big one this morning, Oracle results beat estimates, but shares fall on plans for $40 billion raise. Oh, nobody saw that coming. Oracle on Wednesday delivered a quarterly top and bottom line beat and raised its annual adjusted profit per share guidance. However, shares of the company fell in extended trading after it said it expects to raise $40 billion in financing and fiscal full year 2027. The Austin, Texas-based firm in recent years has turned its focus to cloud computing infrastructure, while its core offerings such as database software and enterprise applications for finance continue to bring in revenue. However, worries have abounded over the impact of the AI can have on Oracle's core business. Oracle has attempted to quell investor concerns by becoming a major player in the development of data centers to support AI workloads, but the amount of debt the company has been raising to fund its data center ambitions has been severely scrutinized. Oracle had intended to raise $50 billion in debt and equity financing for fiscal 2026, ultimately hitting $48 billion. In fiscal 2027, Oracle expects to raise another $40 billion, through a combination of debt and equity financing, including its previously announced $20 billion at-the-market equity issuance. Oracle does not expect to issue additional debt in calendar year 2026, the company said in a statement. All right. And, you know, yeah, they had good growth again. Their revenue growth was 21% for revenue growth, 24% adjusted EPS growth. But I don't care about adjusted EPS. I care about money in the bank. And that's the important thing. This is Oracle's SEC filing for this latest quarter. And it's this line right here I want to draw your attention to. Free cash flow Q4 of 2026 fiscal year, negative $23.7 billion. And look at these quarterly numbers going all the way back to the first quarter of 2025. And this is how you destroy a perfectly good company. 11.2, 9.5, 5.8. All of a sudden, they decide they want to be a data center builder. And they go to negative $394 million, negative $5.8 billion, negative $13.1 billion, negative $24.7 billion, negative $23.7 billion. They are just lighting money on fire. They're going hundreds of billions of dollars in debt. They're diluting their shareholders, and they're not making any money on any of it. That's the problem there. And that's why Oracle stock is getting just destroyed this morning, down 11% ahead of the opening bell, $181.11 off by 22 bucks for Oracle. Year to date, Oracle is now negative for the year. They were previously up about 3% on the year, but after the bell rings this morning, they'll be down for the year. If only there were signs. Meanwhile, OpenAI considers drastic price cuts, anticipating war for users with Anthropic. Oh, price wars are so good for profit margins, aren't they? Oh, that's right. They don't have any profit margins. Oh, so no problem. You can't hurt your profit margins if you don't have any. Is that not how that works? Oh, okay. OpenAI is considering drastically lowering the prices it charges users as it seeks to win customers from its rival Anthropic. The company is weighing significant cuts to what it charges for tokens, the unit of measurement artificial intelligence firms use to bill for their products, according to people familiar with the matter. The move would be in anticipation of similar cuts the company expects at Anthropic, the people said. Business executives have begun to balk at the high prices for AI usage. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman said at a recent event that costs had become a huge issue. I think we have a lot of ways that we can help people get more value for less spend, he said. Drastic price cuts could potentially erode the profit margins of both companies. But you ain't got no profit margins, Lieutenant Dan. Which already lose billions of dollars because of the enormous cost for computing resources needed for AI systems to process queries and carry out tasks. Yikes. Yeah, how's that for the IPO? Dramatically cutting prices when you're already losing money. And why would they do that? How could they do that? Unless they have guarantees of money coming from elsewhere. And as it happens, Trump says he thinks AI companies will agree to giving back to the public. Oh, here's the bailout, guys. The bubble hasn't even burst yet, and they're already bailing it out. U.S. President Donald Trump said Wednesday that he expects top AI companies to agree to giving back to the public, an apparent reference to a possible government stake in the firms. And by giving back to the public, what President Trump means is billions of dollars, possibly tens, even hundreds of billions of dollars of the public's money is given to them, and then they lose it. That's how they give back to the public. I'm going to have meetings with the top 12 or 15 executives very shortly, and we're talking about giving back something to the public. And if we do that, the public will become very rich. Oh, yes, those dividends I keep hearing so much about, Trump told reporters in the White House's Oval Office. I think they'll do that, and I think it'll make it very popular. No, it will not be very popular. Literally, nobody wants this shit. Nobody outside of Silicon Valley wants this, or maybe Wall Street. People don't want the data centers in their backyards. They don't want their jobs to be replaced by chatbots. They don't want to have to sort through AI slop when they're scrolling through the internet. Nobody wants this. Why? Oh, why would we do this? Because Donald wants his stock market bubble. That's why. Meanwhile, we got this one from Citadel Securities on tokenomics. This is a research note by Frank Flight. He says, we have argued for some time that agentic and complex workflows delivered by frontier models would be expensive to run, constrained by physical bottlenecks, and vulnerable to unrealistic expectations of frictionless deployment costs. That judgment now looks less contrarian than it did when we first set it out in February. Ah, yes, February, the distant past. Way to get way out in front of that, Citadel. I mean, you're so far out in front of the pack. It's great that you're patting yourself on the shoulder for February, even though you and all your muckety-muck friends were telling the world to ignore me back in August of 2023. But I digress. Amazon has now removed its token leaderboard. Microsoft has canceled Claude Code subscriptions, and there have been multiple reports of unexpectedly large token bills. The salient point is that even the most powerful technologies must pass through the prosaic discipline of cost curves, capacity constraints, and marginal returns. In other words, math and physics gets a vote. What I've been saying for years. Adoption is therefore becoming less about what frontier models can do in principle and more about the price and scarcity of the inputs required to make AI operational at scale. Compute power, cooling, memory bandwidth, and inference budgets are real and binding constraints. Economic theory tells us that prices perform three basic functions. They signal scarcity, create incentives for substitution, and ration scarce resources toward their highest value uses. These functions apply clearly to AI. Higher compute and inference costs signal the scarcity of the underlying inputs. They encourage substitution away from low return experiments and toward more efficient models or workflows, and they ration scarce capacity toward the areas where the marginal productivity of AI justifies the marginal cost of using it, which is pretty much freaking nowhere. We do not think this implies that the frontier of inference-intensive AI will be abandoned, only that it's likely to be concentrated among a narrower set of firms with the balance sheets to absorb the compute costs, the research depth to deploy it effectively, and most importantly, the operating domain to scale the rewards from solving genuinely hard problems. For the economy at large, simpler models may be the more cost-effective productivity-augmenting pathway until physical constraints are eased. We hence see growing signs of bifurcation in frontier versus everyday AI usage. Let me put this in simple terms. Bubble go boom. That's what that means. Citadel Securities has been warning as far back as February. Oh, good job, Citadel. But that's not going to stop them from burning more cash. Amazon Inc.'s $17.5 billion loan as AI borrowing frenzy grows. Guys, it was two freaking days ago that they borrowed $10 billion in Canada. Soon after selling the biggest Canadian corporate bond sale on record, Amazon inked another multi-billion dollar financing as spending on artificial intelligence soars. The tech giant agreed to a $17.5 billion delayed draw term loan with banks, including Citigroup, according to a filing on Wednesday. The cash is available to the company through to the end of September, and every time the company borrows under the facility, it has 3 years from the date of borrowing to repay the money, the filing shows. In February, OpenAI said Amazon was investing as much as $50 billion in cash in the AI company, initially committing $15 billion. The rest will come when OpenAI meets conditions, such as going public. Amazon this year also invested $10 billion in Anthropic and may inject an additional $15 billion over time. Remember, all that money comes with strings attached. Anthropic and OpenAI have to rent Amazon's data centers. So all this money that they're borrowing, they will report it as revenue as soon as it finishes the round trip, even though there's no underlying economic activity or profit happening whatsoever. They're just moving the same money back and forth. The latest loan could help fund those equity investments, credit sites analyst Jordan Chalfin and Michael Pugh wrote in a note on Wednesday. Amazon could also be a candidate for future equity issuance. Oh, good. More stocks hitting the market. More dilution following stock sales from other big companies, including Alphabet, which raised $84.75 billion last week. More billions fed into the furnace, this time at Amazon. All right. Shifting gears from the AI bubble back to the consumer, who is also not great, Bob. Subprime auto dealer America's Car Mart seeks rescue funds. Not going to make it here. America's Car Mart, a used car seller and subprime lender, is working on an 11th hour capital raise to stave off a potential bankruptcy filing after a cash crunch put the company on the verge of default. That's according to people familiar with the matter. The company's banker, Houlihan Lokey. Ooh, you never want to see that name. You never want to see Houlihan Lokey. Houlihan Lokey has been reaching out to investors to gauge interest in providing at least $500 million of fresh capital, said one of the people asking not to be identified discussing a private matter. The new money would be used to help the troubled borrower plug a liquidity gap and repay existing lenders, the people said. Separately, the company began laying the groundwork for a potential Chapter 11 filing, the people said, as it operates under an extended forbearance through June 12th with lenders. That's tomorrow. The reprieve is tied to anticipated covenant breaches under the company's debt documents, a regulatory filing shows. Lenders in the subprime auto finance market have been facing tough market conditions. High inflation and interest rates have eaten into savings of lower credit consumers, undercutting their ability to repay debts. Delinquency rates on car loans and subprime customers are near their highest on record, hovering around 60%, according to Fitch. America's Car Mart is one of the best known in the buy here, pay here segment of auto finance, where companies operate their own dealerships and also provide financing to customers in-house. The sector caters to deep subprime borrowers who often can't obtain financing elsewhere. Buy here, pay here has also experienced a series of blowups in recent years. Two lenders abruptly shut down in 2023, while another, Tricolor Auto, filed for liquidation last year after an alleged massive fraud came to light. So more trouble in subprime finance land. And every time I see one of these stories, I can't help but give the side eye over to Carvana, wondering how long could it possibly be until that one blows up. But right now, America's Car Mart, not looking so good. They were down 55% yesterday. This is a five-day chart here. Look at that drop on the open for America's Car Mart yesterday. Right now, they're unchanged this morning. I don't know if they're trading a suspended or what, but $2.41. Okay, it's higher by a nickel, but they've lost 90% of their value just year to date. This one's probably not going to make it. And last but not least, Alibaba and JD lead China sell-off after latest Beijing warning. China does not want deflation. Shares of Alibaba and JD slid after Chinese regulators scolded leading e-commerce players for what it called misleading promotions, Beijing's latest warning against unchecked competition in the vast online arena. Alibaba shares fell as much as 6.5% Thursday in Hong Kong, the biggest intraday decline in nearly 3 months. JD.com also dropped almost 6%, the most since November. The stock rout came after the Beijing branch of the State Administration for Market Regulation summoned the two, along with PDD Holdings, ByteDance, and something, I can't pronounce that, Xiaohongshu, over what officials said was false advertising during the annual 618 mid-year online shopping festival, according to a report by CCTV. I don't know what 618 is, it's the golden ratio, sure, but I guess this mid-year shopping festival online, that's like their prime day, and they're lowering prices, and the government is pissed because China doesn't want deflation. And you got to pay attention if you're a big tech executive in China and the government gets pissed at something, because they have a habit of disappearing you in the middle of the night. The name and shame campaign marks the latest run-in between Chinese regulators and the country's e-commerce juggernauts. For months, Beijing has sought to curb a race to the bottom competition that's embroiled some of the biggest companies in a bruising price war that's eroding profits. And look, what's going on here is the wealth effect. I talked about this in some of my Evergrande videos years ago. You know, when people's homes go down in value, they feel less wealthy and they spend less money. Regardless of what happens to their income, they spend less money. It happened here during the GFC. And people's wealth has gone up in smoke in China with the collapse of the housing market over there. And the Chinese consumer is clamming up because of it, which means all of these Chinese sellers are lowering their prices like crazy, chasing that business. And when you get deflation like that, that means the value of the yuan that they already owe is going up and that debt gets harder to pay off. And on top of that, China has a big overcapacity problem. They built way too many factories, way too many electric vehicles. Oversupply is causing prices to collapse. And the Chinese government is trying to put a gun to people's heads and say, don't lower your prices. It'll work to a certain degree. I mean, people will obviously not raise prices if the alternative is death. That just means they're going to go out of business instead. So not good, deflation in China. Inflation in the States sucks. Deflation in China sucks. But hey, you know, there's plenty of good things out there. I don't know. The Knicks won game four. That's kind of good. Anyways, guys, I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee who support the channel. There are links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.